The following is a production of Art Trap Productions, brought to you by the Gallifreyan Embassy and has been made possible by supporting subscribers and donations from listeners like you. This episode is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download at audiblepodcast.com/podshock. Over 75,000 titles to choose from for your iPod or MP3 player. This episode also brought to you by Dragon's Lair Comics and Fantasy. Check out their website at dlair.net. That's D as in dragon, lair.net. Live from 21 kilometers beneath the Earth's surface, it's Doctor Who Podshock.
Doctor Who Podshock.
Okay, well, let's do it now. Whatever it is, if it's valuable, send it to us.
For the best in all things Doctor Who, it's Doctor Who Podshock, the podcast all about Doctor Who, the longest-running science fiction television program, with Louis Trapani.
Hello.
Ken Deep.
Hello.
James Norton.
Hello.
News.
Fabulous.
Reviews.
Oh, no.
And fan mail for James.
Over 40,000.
Doctor Who Podshock, from the Gallifreyan Embassy.
You know, that guy James was really cool. Oh, yeah, we blew that.
I'm the Doctor, and who are you?
The Gallifreyan Embassy, celebrating 25 years of time and space, brings you Doctor Who Podshock, episode 203. This is Louis Trapani, and this is our live show reviewing The Hungry Earth. As always, if you have not seen The Hungry Earth yet, please wait until you have before listening to this podcast. And not surprisingly, everyone had a lot to say about The Hungry Earth, so this podcast is being split up into two. This is the first of two of our live show reviewing The Hungry Earth. So without any further ado, let's join Ken Deep, Dave Cooper, and myself reviewing The Hungry Earth live, recorded last Sunday, the 23rd of May, 2010. With, as always, live feedback from you, our listeners.
Stage 4 target drill depth scheduled in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Stage 4 target drill depth achieved. Drill depth now 21 kilometers.
Further than anyone's ever drilled into the earth. Thanks for your amazing work. Have a great weekend. Onwards and downwards.
Stop that. Real work is here now.
Evening, Mo.
Right, off you go. Get out. My gaff for the night.
Mad.
Behold! Rio!
Nah.
Not really getting the Sunshine Carnival vibe.
No. Ooh, feel that though. What's that?
The ground feels strange.
It's a graveyard. You promised me a beach.
Bluegrass. 2020-ish, 10 years in your future, wrong continent, free, I will admit, but it's not a massive overshoot.
Why are those people waving at us?
It's you two.
No, we're here. How can we be up there?
10 years in your future, come to relive past glories, I'd imagine.
And, oh, look, big mining thing.
Oh, I love a big mining thing.
Go on, I'll catch you both up.
The drill shut down. There's no sign of Mo. Nobody's been in or out of the perimeter between last night. That wasn't there last night. How the hell did that get there?
I don't know.
Well, that was quick.
Where's your uniform?
Don't be cheeky, Elliot. Plain clothes. CID, is it?
I'm sorry, I don't understand.
Nobody has touched the grave since my aunt was buried. But when we dug it open, the body was gone.
Hello!
Who are you?
What are you doing?
None of your business.
The drill's up and running again. What's going on? Who are these people?
Amy, the doctor. We're not staying. Are we, doctor?
Why is there a big patch of earth in the middle of your floor? The ground's attacking us.
No, that's not possible.
Under the circumstances, I'd suggest...
Run!
Doctor, the ground's got my leg! No!
I've got you!
No! Okay.
Your drill! Shut it down! Go! Now!
Amy,
concentrate. Don't you give up!
Tell Rory!
Amy! No! No!
Where is she?
She's gone.
This is Louis Trapani, and joining me in this episode is Mr. Ken Deep. Hello, Ken. Did we lose Ken? I think we lost Ken.
He must have dropped off.
I guess he's at work, so he probably can't respond right now. Dave A.C. Cooper is across the pond and joining me as always, except for next week, as always. Hey, Dave.
Hi, Lisa. Now I'm missing the blue grass of home.
No, we've got plenty of blue grass in this episode and next episode as well. You're gonna be missing some blue grass.
Yes, real world events, but I shall be here in spirit.
As opposed
or in
to
wine.
As opposed
or
to us fake world events here. It's okay. We understand, Dave. So Dave is with us, and Ken is sort of with us. He is calling him from work, so he's probably having some interference from work. Damn, these people. Don't they know we're recording a podcast here? They can't be interfering with Ken there with his podcasting from work. All right.
Graham, the Second Doctor, has that problem, you know. Yeah, keeps going to work. Can't understand it.
Well, we're here to review, and again, if you haven't seen this episode, that's the latest one that was on BBC last night as we record this live. It was The Hungry Earth. Well, it still is The Hungry Earth, and that's what we're talking about right now. And it's the return of I just hate that. Let's see. Let me just try Ken one more time.
What's next?
Ken, are you there? All right. Well, he's unmuted right now, so if he can chime in, he will. All right. So we're talking about The Hungry Earth, as I was saying. We see the return of a race that haven't seen in some time yet. It's started in the Pertwee era, the Silurians, which I have to say, you know, we knew this was coming. Early on in the production when they were shooting, some location photos were leaked from the church that they were shooting at, and many people, I remember someone had tweeted me, or maybe it was on our website, said, could that be? And I'm like, well, I don't know. It doesn't really look like a Silurian, but these, as it's stated in this episode, the Doctor says it's branched off from another race because it's a different branch of the same species, in other words, because they look completely different outside of the reptilian, you know, skin. They really don't look like the Silurians that we know. But then again, so were the Sea Devils. The Sea Devils were the cousins of the Silurians, and obviously they look completely different as well. So it's not so far-fetched that these are a subsect species of the Silurians. Though with their masks on, with their bulbous eyes, they look more like Sleestaks from Land of the Lost than Silurians. But, I mean, they look amazing, you know, but without the mask or whatever, you can, the facial expressions from the actors underneath really come through, and they just look nothing like the Silurians, you know, outside of the reptilian form and all that. But again, that's okay. So, it was directed by Ashley Way, and written by Chris Chibnall, who's no stranger to Doctor Who, and I think Torchwood as well, if I'm not mistaken. I'm not sure about Ashley Way. There was some good shots in here, some nice compositions, I thought, especially the scene where they're at the gate, and, they were breaking and entering, but the Doctor corrects Amy and says, no, they're sonic and entering, or something like that. Some nice angles, some low angles shooting up and all that. Different use of music here, done in a very different way than what we saw in... Darth Skeptical is in chat here. If you don't know why we're doing a live show, we have chat here, which you can participate in while we're recording. And Darth has chimed in saying Ashley Way is a most prolific director of Torchwood episodes in Series 1 and 2. And Chibnall, if I'm sure I'm mispronouncing it, is the head writer of Torchwood.
I think that's right.
Series 2. So yeah, I had that inkling that he was involved with Torchwood.
Yeah, Chibnall's the bloke who looks like Brent Spinner's double. He looks like Data. If you've ever seen him on The Confidentials.
Yes, yes. Yeah, I know. I remember you making a mention of that early on in an early episode of Doctor Who Podshock. So, but speaking of this, they're going back to when we first met the Silurians was during the John Pertwee era. And I have to say that this episode very much had a Pertwee era feel to it. And perhaps that was deliberate, or maybe it's just me being reminiscent of the Silurians of, you know, the John Pertwee era. But it just had that, you know, they were working in this drilling facility, which just had... It was overcast. It just had all that was missing was Bessie and you know the Brigadier, but it just had that whole flavor of those early John Pertwee stories, I thought, which was nice. And I have to say that when I was first watching this, I was operating with very little sleep. It wasn't so much operating with very little sleep, but I had did a live show in New York on Thursday, and I had very little sleep during that day. I only had about a couple hours of sleep, so it was all catching up to me. So watching this initially, it just seemed... It's a whole different experience the second time I watched this after getting some sleep. And the first time, it just seemed like it dragged on a bit, but that wasn't the case the second time. And I'm going to go with my second viewing reaction to this episode as opposed to my first viewing of it. Because on my first viewing, and again, I always feel bad when we're in these situations where we have to review a part one of obviously a two-part story where, you know, the story is incomplete. So it's kind of hard to review half an episode here or half a story here. And that's what, you know, we're sort of faced with right now. So I always feel it's a bit... doing an injustice to the story or injustice to the creative team judging half their work here. Be that as it may. Okay, that's it. That's the show's over. We'll come back next week, except for Dave. So be that as it may, I'll, you know, go on and make some points about this first half of this story. I thought it was, like I said, on the second viewing, I enjoyed it much better for some reason, and I think it was just because I was really tired the first time. Interesting things that we see here. We see a future Amy, but we see them from afar, a future Amy and Rory. I thought was a nice touch, you know, and it's the way we've seen Stephen Moffat play with time in Doctor Who, and I thought that was a nice touch, perhaps foreshadowing to what's might to come, you know, this whole debate about what's going on, you know, with Flesh and Stone and the Doctor with the coat and whether or not there's some stuff that might happen later on. Some people have theories about what's going to come. Perhaps, you know, stuff is being played with in the timelines right now that are, that will be revealed later on in the series, and who knows. As I was saying, it takes place at a church, this drilling facility, and it opens up with a flurry of activity there at this drilling site, at this, this abandoned church there. And I know it's the weekend, they make that clear, but it just seems very strange that, you know, at this drilling site, and they're still doing drilling over the weekend, but there's, like, no one else there except for, like, a very, very small skeleton crew. You know, it's just one worker and the head of the company, it seems, and his daughter, and it just seems it seemed very scaled down. It didn't, that aspect of it, I mean, not a deal breaker or anything like that. It just seemed a little unrealistic there. But I don't know. Maybe that's the way the way it's operated there, you know, in the UK. I don't know. I would find that hard to accept in the US because. I guess we seem to work throughout the weekend.
I think a better idea would have been if they'd been sort of drilling for Welsh gold or something like that, where it would perhaps be more believable as a little small private concern. Obviously not going down to those depths, of course, but then you wouldn't have had a story, maybe. Or maybe they could have hit a fissure and done it that way.
Well, so the story opens up, and there's the subtitle saying the location and the year and all that, which is fine. It was unnecessary because it's revealed in the story that it takes place 10 years later, and you know, and it's, you know, where they are and all that. again, not a biggie. Just seemed like they didn't really need to have that.
Unless that comes back to them spotting themselves, the Doctor spotting them on the hillside. Mm-hmm.
And if you quote The Confidential, there's some a cut scene that we see a little bit on The Confidential, which I thought was really interesting. I understand why it was cut. It was in the scene. They explore some of the Doctor's relationship with Rory and Amy, talking to the Doctor about how he feels about him and all that. And granted, it doesn't really pertain too much to the story or doesn't propel the story forward, but it's still interesting. And it's a shame that it had to be cut, and because they had to keep this under 45 minutes, and you know, which is a shame as well, because I wish, you know, I thought that added some character depth, and it would, you know. If they could have just asked the BBC for a few extra minutes in this episode, it would have been nice to have.
I think, I mean, Ian, the Sixth Doctor, I don't think he'll be able to make it today. He loves Rory as a companion more than Amy Pond, and he was upset about that. But I think they did explain in The Confidential that it was like a one and three-quarter minute scene, and you couldn't chop a bit of the scene out. You either had to show the thing in its entirety or not at all, and since they were trying to find 15 minutes of cuts.
I just wish they didn't have to find 15 minutes of cuts.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, it would have been that horrific to give this an hour, you know, instead of, it was, what, just under 44 minutes, I think, or 43 and change or something.
Yeah, before the little preview bit, yeah.
Yeah. And speaking of Roy, I think, you know, we're seeing more of him now, and, you know, I'm feeling more, you know, that I'm getting to know him better now. I still don't like the dumbing him down part of his character, like him not knowing the Sherlock Holmes quote that the boy Elliot was talking to him while he was, you know, walking, you know, while he was checking out the gravesite and all that. You know, I just would think that here he is, you know, studying to be a nurse or whatever. Not that he has to be, you know, high up on Sherlock Holmes, but that's like a very obvious quote from Sherlock Holmes.
Never mind that. I think most people would have jumped out of the grave when somebody suggested that they were being pulled under.
Well, that too. Well, we know he's not, you know, he's brave. We know that. And, you know, he may not go, you know, running into battle, but he'll, when push comes to shove, he'll take a stick and hit an old lady. But speaking of the boy Elliot, I thought that whole relationship with him and the Doctor is kind of interesting. And it was kind of interesting seeing how, you know, he went missing and the Doctor had to, you know, sort of just fessed up like he was the last one that had seen him. And he got scolded by his mother, you know, the Doctor was scolded by his mother, you know, he was acting on his own, you know, you couldn't just let him do that and all that. And kind of goes back to that whole question about, you know, the Doctor being a father and all that, and in a very subtle way, you know, where I just thought it was interesting that they had that there. Speaking about The Confidential again, we go to Karen Gillan talking about being drowned in the soil and being pulled under and how that was so difficult for her to do and scary and claustrophobic and all that. And I have to say that scene didn't disturb me as much as her waking up in encased in that closed, like, coffin-like whatever encasement that she was in, and they gassed her and all that, and I was feeling a bit claustrophobic there. I thought they did that very well. So,
yeah, one of the thoughts I had was that, although it may be relevant to the story in other ways, the fact that they glimpsed their future selves on the hillside was perhaps some reassurance to young children that, you know, when, I mean, there could have been quite a lot of people under 10, maybe some older ones, in tears when Amy is sucked under the earth. Mm-hmm. Because if they remember back and they've been watching, we saw that half disappear under, you know, like a sinking sand, you know, in the Doctor's Daughter episode. So they know it's you know, a life-threatening thing, that this could be the end of it. So that whether that was thrown in to just offset their fears, and I think in that confidential clip you mentioned, the very first bit of it, Amy says, "Well, we're going to be all right, aren't we? Because we've seen ourselves." And the Doctor,
yeah, that
says
was the cut scene,
like,
but that was part of that, yeah, cut scene, yeah.
Something like, well, no, because at the moment the time stream is that we're all right, but presumably the events that they then act upon may change that future.
Yeah, see, I thought maybe that's why that scene was important to keep in, because, and you know, you can just assume that, oh, well, they're definitely going to make it out of it because we've seen them in the future. So, you know, so I thought that was was a good reason to keep that scene in. I was saying earlier how I thought this was very Pertwee era-like, and another scene which draws to that was the scene where Elliot's mother, who I don't recall her name, so I'm just referring to her as Elliot's mother, the child's mother, was bringing the weapons into the car, and the doctor got very, not cross with her, but he made his point that he'd rather not use those weapons. It's not his way, and he said to her, you know, you're better than this, or something like that. And I just, that just felt very Pertwee-ish to me.
Yeah, so it certainly was.
The coming attractions for this, for the next episode, are really, I mean, I think someone, I think it might have been James in our last show, said that the previews, the coming attractions, weren't doing justice to the actual episodes. And I think James had a point there. And I think up until now, I think the coming attractions for next week are really exciting. I know I played it back a few times. That, and also just to see the Silurians again, because some of the, in the coming attractions, they look like they weren't wearing masks, and they had those Sleestak eyes look like they were their real faces, like they weren't wearing masks. But I freeze framed a couple scenes, and it was clear that they had the masks on. Others, it wasn't so clear. So I don't know if, again, if maybe this is another branch of the Silurians. I don't know. We'll see. We'll see next week. So overall, I thought it was good. Oh, another piece of interesting dialogue. I throughout this whole series, lots of great dialogue. I just thought, and going back to the Rory character and the doctor's relationship with him, I really thought it was interesting how he said to him, after Rory realizes that Amy's gone, and he sort of emotionally grabs Rory and says, I need you alongside of me, you know. And I thought that was just great stuff there, just great building of characterization there, and great dialogue. Initially, when I first saw this, I said, I was thinking maybe just middle of the road, 2.5 TARDIS groans, but now this is definitely 3.5, 4 TARDIS groans I'm giving this. I thought it was good. I thought it was very good, and I'm looking forward to next week.
I think it was Ambrose, the boy's mother, but I hear Ken in the background, so...
Is Ken back?
Ken.
I am here, and I'm afraid my time is extremely brief.
So, Ken, why don't you jump in? I wasn't sure if you were able to talk.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, and I didn't know if... Well, anyway, let me just bang it out. I think this is a 5 TARDIS grown story. It's normally a 4.5 for me. I push it up to 5 because the Silurians are some of my favorite baddies of all time. Interesting in The Confidential that they focused on the Doctor Who and the Silurians with Pertwee, and that was it. They didn't mention the Sea Devils. They didn't mention Warriors of the Deep. So it was interesting that they picked to focus on just one story. Like many re-envisionings in the new series, it was handled very well in saying that the Silurians, first off, that's the wrong name, and they go by different names, and they're a similar race, but these are different species living in our own Earth. So it attaches it to that mythology, but it makes it something that can stand on its own. Why they look different, why they're acting different, why maybe these are the warrior class as opposed to something that we had seen before. So I thought all that stuff worked well. I have a soft spot in my heart for these particular baddies, and I knew they were coming, and this is something I was looking forward to. And again, we haven't seen the second part, but it's lived up to the hype for me, and I really enjoyed the story. It's a version of the base under siege. There's a few familiar elements with it's a small town, and they're drilling, and it's like, well, we've seen that twice in the Pertwee era. That seemed to be a theme in that first season. But you need to drill 9 chances out of 10 you need to stick something in the ground to get the Silurians to make their appearance. So I went with that. You know, that was one of a very narrow amount of plausible reasons why the Silurians would show up. And there were some interesting explanations, and once again, Matt Smith is back on point and just having a grand old time. I thought the scene with the child, there was a nice bonding scene, and again, wonderful Doctor Who when the boy and the doctor are talking, and then to see who was the last to see my son, and this just sort of white as a ghost look comes across Matt Smith's face was just fantastic. Wonderful performance, fantastic Doctor Who, and I really enjoyed the story. And I'm really looking forward to next week. To hopefully that part two lives up to part one or betters it. And this is probably my second favorite story so far of the season. I really enjoyed Time of the Angels and Flesh and Stone. I like The 11th Hour so far. Those are ones that I've rewatched. And I'm definitely going to be rewatching part one of this heading into next week. So when I use my rewatch factor scale, and knowing that I want to see this a few more times, and I'm going to watch it a few more times probably when I get home from work, all those things being said, I give it a little extra oomph. So.
Very good. Yeah, I thought it was very good, too. Like I said, I think the first time I watched it, I was just under myself. I just was under bad conditions. But
I want to point out to you, Lewis, you mentioned about the extra scenes, and I, too, I like the idea that at some point on a DVD, these scenes will be included, and we will be able to explore an expanded version of this story. I don't know how I feel about them tailoring the length of the show to the international market, and that seems to be what they've been doing. They've been keeping it tight for use on BBC America.
Except for Vampires of Venice went over for some reason, but the others were all under 44 minutes.
And in a two-parter, you would think that there was a little more room, particularly that the Time of Angels was kind of light. And past two-parters under the tutelage of Stephen Moffat seems to have, you know, been a little bit shorter. So it's curious. I know it's a different writer and all that, but, well, I'll be curious to see about it next week. I hope the extras are included on the DVD release. That's a must.
Well, it makes you think about the other stories. How, you know, what scenes are they cutting out of the other stuff that we're, you know, that Doctor Who Confidential didn't show us?
Yeah, and I like the idea that at some point the artists, meaning the director and the editor and the producer and the writers, the people that are in control, are saying, let's keep this tight and fast-paced and as something that's going to keep the attention of the entire audience, whether it be young or old, with the knowledge that they can always expand it later. I don't really have a problem with that. As long as they do that, as long as they don't just leave it on the cutting room floor to never be seen again.
Yeah.
And that's my take on it.
Well, let's hope they do it. I don't recall them having those cut scenes in past discs.
All right. And then on the off chance I have to bow out, I will see everybody again next week because we're here at work and we're very busy. So cheers, everybody, and thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you for chiming in at work. I know how difficult that is.
Sure.
All right. So we'll hand the ball back to Dave as long as he doesn't go home with it.
First of all, I'm really pleased that Ken's enthusiastic about it because I was talking about it earlier, and although I liked it, I was finding it difficult to enthuse about it because exactly the same point as you made, it's always difficult with the two-parter. But I've got a feeling that you know, it's one of these cases where in a lot of two-parters, we're often disappointed by the second part. I've got a feeling with this one, there is a good build-up, but it's not. My expectations are not enormously high for the second part, but I feel as though they're going to be able to easily, build on what we've seen today. There were a couple of other things. I mean, some mentioned the barrier that was put up. The Damians, they had the barrier in, and I think it's been used in a couple of other Doctor Who stories where, you know, the village is cut off or whatever, mm-hmm. or there's some sort of energy field around things. So that was very good. It was nice, in a way, almost, that Amy took a bit of a back seat to Rory in this episode. So, you know, we've had quite a journey for the different characters. I mean, everybody has had their sort of moment to stand out. I hope this doesn't signal the fact that Amy's now going to be, you know, the screamer Pauline in peril, but I think he just demanded it for this scene. And quite rightly, as other people have commented on our other show, she showed some real guts,
yeah,
when you quite rightly say.
I thought it was great when
Waking up in a
when she says, "Are you shushing me?" did you just shush me?
And I'll be frank, I think the fear factor was higher than the one for the angels. I got a feeling that they dialed it back down with the angels to the point where I wouldn't say they watered it down, but they certainly took a measured approach to it. And it may well be that those things that we've alluded to, the seeing them on the in the hill, and the other point is, were they waving, or were they frantically saying, you know, don't? So, but that may well at least been there to reassure young children. Of course, we have that young, another young child who is a very good child actor.
And speaking of fear factor, I thought they did that scene with him being chased in the graveyard very well. I mean, it was done very classic style, you know, going back to like the 50s horror films, you know, where you don't really see who's chasing you and it's all dark. And I thought that was a good nod to classic horror filmmaking where I think it worked very well.
Yeah, and then there's a reference like to the Inferno where the chap gets infected. Now, I didn't particularly like that elongated tongue they did. It must have been about 15 or 20 feet long. I don't think that actually worked. I would have rather they came up with some other way of, you know, infecting him.
Yeah, maybe
if
like
an infection,
saliva, like spit, like if it was...
Well, I even thought, you know, bring back the Janus thorn or something, you know. But something that... was done, maybe even a rake of the nails or something across the cheek. I'm aware we're coming to the half-hour mark and you've got a nice, healthy group of people who want to talk. So I'll keep it that and hope that people also give a listen to our show after they've...
It's the Cult and Collective.
Course, to Podshow. The Cult and Collective podcast on the Talkshow ID 54821.
Hosted by you and Ian.
That's correct. And it will be up on iTunes, as will this show.
At this point, let's go back to where it all started with the Silurians, Doctor Who and the Silurians, starring John Pertwee. And let's do that with our sponsor, Audible.com. Audible.com is the Internet's leading provider of spoken audio entertainment, information, and educational programming. Content from Audible is downloaded and played back on your personal computers, CDs, iPod player, MP3 player, whatever, just like this podcast that you're listening to right now. Audible offers over 80,000 hours of audio programs, and listen whenever and wherever you like. Audible has over 50,000 titles to choose from. Every genre, Audible has it covered. Now, you can get a free audiobook download when you sign up for a free trial today. Simply go to www.audiblepodcast.com/podshock to get your free audiobook today. And, as always, we like to recommend a title, and what better title to recommend than Doctor Who and the Silurians? Yes, this is where it all began, with the Silurians, that is. It's a John Pertwee story. This BBC audio drama incorporates the original soundtrack from the 1970 TV adventure, starring John Pertwee, and it has linking narration with Caroline John. Caroline played, as you remember, Liz Shore, who was the assistant to the Third Doctor at the time, the companion, his companion in his first year as the Doctor. And instead of a big drill thing, in this case, it was a nuclear energy research center that was suffering mysterious power losses and a series of staff breakdowns. So, of course, investigating on behalf of UNIT, the Brigadier calls in the Doctor, assisted by scientist Liz Shore. Let's hear a little bit from that now.
Oh! Deep underground, two potholers are exploring. A rope ladder descends into a large cavern, impressively ornamented with weirdly shaped stalagmites and stalactites. A middle-aged man named Davis secures the foot of the ladder as his younger colleague Spencer carefully climbs down the final rungs.
Oh, this is fantastic.
What's that? Davis's nonchalant attitude does nothing to reassure Spencer. Puzzled, he moves towards a cleft in the far corner of the cavern. Spencer steps back and allows his more experienced friend to take the lead. The two men progress down a narrow passage, the light from their helmet lamps playing strange shadows across the limestone walls that press in about them. This time the sound seems terrifyingly close, just beyond a fissure in the rock wall. Davis edges carefully around the corner. Two huge reptilian eyes glimmer in the darkness. A scaly claw smashes him down. Rounding the corner, Spencer looks in horror at the massive shape looming over his friend's dead body. He turns and runs for his life. In one of unit headquarters' several garages, a gleaming yellow Edwardian roadster stands surrounded by a jumble of engine parts.
Doctor! Come on, Bessie, be more cooperative.
All that can be seen of the car's owner are his legs as he works on the front axle.
Doctor!
Well, hello, Liz.
You'll never get that thing running.
Well, don't you be so disrespectful.
The doctor struggles to his feet.
I'll have you know this is a car of great character. I was pretty lucky to get her.
Are you really going to drive about in it?
Yes, certainly. I've nearly finished my modifications. Thought we might take her out for a trial run in a minute. Now, I wonder what that's for.
The doctor is holding what to Liz looks worryingly like the car's fan belt.
Oh, well.
Urgent message from the Brigadier.
He's away, isn't he? Investigating some sound.
Just, yes, he wants us to join him. Miss Shaw and the doctor will report themselves forthwith to Wenley Moor. Attend a briefing meeting.
My dear Miss Shaw, I never report myself anywhere. Particularly not forthwith.
Oh, it's just his way of putting things.
Well, I'm sorry, miss. I won't go. I'm far too busy.
Come on, doctor.
The doctor has disappeared back underneath the car.
It was brilliant and the slithy toes.
It would make a nice trip for us. Oh, we could visit the caves.
Caves? What caves?
Well, that part of the country's famous for them.
Oh. Mm. Is it?
It is.
Oh, all right, then.
Persuaded, he hauls himself up once more.
I'll drive you up there in Bessie.
Bessie is the car that the third doctor drove during his tenure. So this could be your free audiobook if you go to audiblepodcast.com/podshock and you can make this your free selection. It doesn't have to be. You can choose anything you like. As I said, Audible has over 50,000 titles to choose from. So go there and browse audiblepodcast.com/podshock and get your free audiobook download when you sign up for a free trial today. And you know who else has CDs? Dragon's Lair Comics and Fantasy. We would like to thank our sponsor, Dragon's Lair Comics and Fantasy, with stores in both Austin and San Antonio, Texas, and now Bellevue, Washington. They sell Doctor Who action figures, CDs, comics, and more. They also sell board games, role-playing games, card games, graphic novels, Magna, and a whole lot more. Check out their website, dlayer.net. That's D as in dragon, lair.net. Or give them a call at 512-454-2399. We thank Dragon's Lair Comics and Fantasy for their support, as well as audible.com.
Are they dead?
Something pulled her in. It wanted her. You said the ground was dormant. Just a patch of earth when you first saw it this morning. And the drill had been stopped.
Doctor, that is ridiculous.
I'm not saying that, and it's not ridiculous. I just don't think it's right.
Oh, of course. Bioprogramming.
What?
You use biosignals to resonate the internal molecular structure of natural objects. It's mainly used in engineering and construction, mostly jungle planets, but that's way in the future, not here.
Sorry, did you just say jungle planets?
You're not making any sense, man.
Excuse me, I'm making perfect sense. You're just not keeping up.
Doctor.
Shh, silence, absolute silence. If you shut the drill down,
why can I still hear drilling? It's under the ground.
That's not possible.
Those trace minerals weren't X marking the spot saying dig here. They were a warning. Stay away.
Because while you've been drilling down, somebody else has been drilling up.
Whatever bioprogrammed the Earth is on its way up.
You see that?
Energy signal originating from under the Earth. We're trapped.
Doctor, something weird's going on here. The graves are eating people.
Not now, Rory.
Where's Amy?
I'll get her back.
What do you mean, get her back? Where's she gone?
She was taken.
Into the Earth.
How?
Why didn't you stop it?
I tried, I promise, I tried.
Well, you should have tried harder!
Ambrose, we saw the Doctor's friend get taken, OK? You saw the lightning in the sky. I have seen the impossible today. And the only person who's made any sense of it for me is the Doctor. Him?
Me!
Can you get my dad back?
Yes.
I don't understand what you're going to do.
Two-phase plan. First, the sensors and cameras will let us know when something arrives. Second, if something does arrive, I use this to send a sonic pulse through that network of devices, a pulse which would temporarily incapacitate most things in the universe.
Knock them out. Cool. Have you met monsters before?
Yeah.
You scared of them?
No, they're scared of me.
Will you really get my dad back?
No question.
I left my headphones at home. Where's Elliot?
He said he was going to get headphones.
You let him go? He was out there on his own! Mum! Let me in! Mum! This will be not you!
Hush, Elliot!
Hush, Elliot, get the rest! Mum! Hurry up!
Come on!
Well, let's get to people in the queue. And as always, Podchuck supporting subscribers will be bumped up in the queue. And we can't do the show without support. And they help support us. So this is our way of showing some appreciation. So if you'd like to, if you're not already a Podchuck supporting subscriber, go to our website, thegallifreyembassy.org or podchuck.net. And on the top, you'll see a banner on how you can become one. And we appreciate your support. So first up in that queue, as far as subscribers go, would be our friend, mystery presenter. Hello. Welcome back to the show.
Hi, Lewis.
Hi, how are you?
Grand. Just the point, I thought it was good, like, having a kid. I think he was a good actor, as you were saying, like, especially with the skating.
Mm-hmm. That's the actor that played Elliot.
Yeah. Also, I wonder what's going to happen to him in the next episode.
Yeah, I don't think we do. Is he seen in the preview? I don't recall seeing him in the preview for the coming attractions for next week.
Yeah.
Samuel Davies.
I just hope he's not dissected.
Is the actor's name, according to Dave, in chat.
Yep.
Well, yeah.
Also, I'm just
this whole live dissection that we've seen with his father, yeah, and all that. It was a pretty scary thought, thinking about how that transpired, you know, that we don't see. We just see the results of that.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I was talking on you, so go ahead.
Yeah. Dave? I was just wondering, is Doctor Who on next week? Oh, is it like just before the Eurovision?
I think it's on next week. I don't think Eurovision is interfering with it this year. Terrasa, 7 p.m. next week.
I shall check. Oh, but Terrasa has done it. Thank you.
Yeah. I think in previous years, Eurovision interfered with the scheduling, and I don't think that's the case this year.
No, it starts at the Eurovision starts at 8. It's 7. But again, they're moving the times around. It's been 6:20, 6:25, all sorts of times, but it's 7.
Yeah. Actually, it's a bit annoying with the changing of the times.
Yeah.
You have to kind of check.
Yeah, I can understand that.
Don't think there's anything much more to say about
it. So, are you a big fan of the Pertwee era? Did you like the original Silurian story? And did you think this one is a good follow-up to that?
Well, I haven't really watched much of that year.
Okay.
Just one or two episodes.
Oh, right.
I haven't seen the Silurians.
Ah, so now you have some homework now. You have to go back and I haven't seen, I've seen it, but I haven't seen it recently, so
yeah.
I need to pick up the DVD of that and watch it.
Yeah. I might have to go out and buy the DVD. I don't think I have a copy of
it. Yeah, I don't. I have to buy it myself, too.
Yeah.
All right, so how would you rate the story so far? I know it's only halfway through.
Yeah. I think I'll give it about 4 Tazos rounds.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Yeah, and I don't think I said on mine. I'll give it about 3 at the moment, but I think it was well crafted, and it was a solid episode. I'm hanging.
It leaves you hungry for more.
Yeah, yeah, it's difficult.
The hungry
yeah.
Earth is still hungry. Yeah, I felt the same way, that it just was, you can't really, it's, you're only getting half the story, so it's kind of hard to judge. I mean, I just said before, I'll give it up to 4 TARDIS drones, but after, after next week, that will change depending on next week.
Yep.
Yeah.
All right, well, thank you, MP, Mystery Presenter.
Yeah.
Will you ever reveal your name or no?
Well, smash a few working out here on my app. Well, I must give you some more clues.
Okay. All right, well,
yeah.
It's like the Doctor, we just don't know.
I think it's number 6.
All right, well, thank you so much. We're going to get to others in the queue, so thanks again. Cheers.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye. All right.
Bye.
And next up we had, it's Helen. Okay. Are you there, Helen?
Hey, how you doing, Lewis?
Hi, how are you?
Oh, I'm doing pretty good considering. I had so much to say about this episode. I mentioned a lot of it during the Cultum Collective, but I just wanted to repeat that, I really enjoyed this episode. I was really surprised Darth told me that Millennium FX really wasn't mentioned for doing the prosthetics in this episode.
It was in the confidential. They mentioned it.
Yeah. So I'm so glad they mentioned it there. Majors like that was in was mentioned. One of the head prosthetics guys from MFX. I think Chibnall did a wonderful job in writing this episode and bringing back the Silurians. I just love the new Silurians, and the fact that they have reinvented them so many times with the Underwater Menace and the Warriors of the Deep, and I'm like really surprised that I didn't actually get to watch the Confidential yet, so I still have that yet to view.
Mm-hmm.
But just in watching the episode itself, I was just really impressed with it. The fact, and what did I want to say? The tongue lashing on that, I kind of liked because it kind of reminded me of an iguana or some kind of lizard that can spurt out its tongue. And somebody mentioned End of the World. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that's what they were going after, that whole lizard thing.
Yeah, I kind of like that, but and also the fact Amy being dragged under. I mean, that was really weird. And then, of course with the Samuel having being dyslexic and the Doctor figuring it out right away, the reason he had to go back for his headphones was because that was the way he kept in touch with the audiobooks. So, and but the fact is, it's just the timing of it was it was very well done.
Well, I like the way the Doctor had reinforced, Elliot saying, that I think he mentioned Albert Einstein and someone else of note, which I can't recall right now. Didn't dyslexia didn't stop them, and it shouldn't stop you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think actually it was a reference for him going back to his Audible.com audiobook.
So we'll save that for later for our spot.
He listened to David Tennant episodes. What can I say? Somebody mentioned, does Doctor Who even own in this particular venue of Doctor Who in this current season? Because nobody seemed to recognize the TARDIS. And I was like, of course they would recognize the TARDIS. It's only certain people would recognize what the TARDIS was.
So, I'm sorry, you were saying who didn't recognize the TARDIS?
Somebody had mentioned at one point, I can't remember where, but that they caught that. Yeah, it was Matt. It was Elliot's mother.
Yeah, they didn't recognize it as a police box. They thought it was some sort of mobile police unit. Yeah,
I think that Elliot said mobile crime lab or something like that. You know, and
yeah. But then, of course, he's too young to recognize a police box. The police boxes went out.
Yeah.
I mean,
well, even his mother's too young for it. But it said police box, and obviously she had just called the police, so it's she just, you know, assumed, you know, seeing a police box there, it had to do with the police. And he was just a plainclothes policeman.
I really enjoyed that whole scene. And then, we see, Amy getting tucked under. I mean, that was, like, really, really scary for me. I was like, oh no. Like, it wasn't so much Doctor's Daughter thing, more than Deadly Assassin type thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what was happening here with the Earth, and the fact that when he first arrived, Doctor realized something was wrong with the whole area. It's like the gravity was wrong or something was wrong.
Yeah, he felt the ground didn't feel right. I guess it felt
hollow. Yeah, the ground didn't feel right. Yeah. And then he looks around, you know, and he goes, this is much better than Rio. You know, he goes, this is much better than Rio.
It was good that he was excited about the drill.
Yeah,
you know,
that drill.
Then who was it that brought up before the other show that the fact that why would this upset the Solarians and not the fact that the Austin Hagen key didn't?
Yeah, that was referring to the fact that the atomic bombs that had been drilled down, the ones that Marv had the key to, Lois, mm-hmm. just to remind you.
Yeah.
And they were a lot deeper.
Well, maybe it didn't
the only
hit their civilization.
Oh, yeah.
Or then
the
again,
only comment I could make on that was the fact that when these people are claiming right at the beginning, you know, they'd gone down 21 kilometres, probably secret organisations had gone deeper than that. But as far as they knew, in what had been publicised, they had gone the deepest. But military operations have probably gone deeper than that.
Well, also not to mention that we don't know what's going on time-wise because Amy has no recollection of the Daleks. So,
exactly.
You know, we don't know what, you know, the Solarians may not have any recollection of
oh, dear. You're not going to tell me the Brigadier with an eye patch is going to turn up, are you?
Who knows?
Oh.
Oh. Do you think it has something to do with the fact that in the 11th hour he ends up back in time to 2005 before anything that happened in the last four seasons occurred?
You mean when he went to say goodbye to Rose, or to at least see her one more time?
Mm-hmm.
Right. And then, you know, the TARDIS goes out of control, he goes up, regenerates, the TARDIS goes out of control, and it's like there was no real cut scene between okay, that was then and this is now.
Well, yeah.
If this was an immediate, okay, this is what's happening next, then he kind of like crash lands, and he's still in, he never actually time traveled. He just orbited and then came crashing back down.
Well, we'll see at the end of the series whether that was just continuity errors or if this has something to do with.
Yeah, I think they've tried to cloud the water so that, you know, basically some of the things may have happened, others didn't. And whether that's going to be resolved in the final two-parter this season, we'll have to wait. So it's messing with our head. Did you give a rating or not, by the way?
I say, as a first part of a two-parter, I did like the ending with the civilization of the Silurians being down there. It kind of reminded me kind of like Journey to the Center of the Earth. But mm-hmm. I would give this 4 out of 5 is like Lewis. And like you said, Lewis, I'd rate it higher once I see the second half.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you so much, Helen. As always, all the best to you.
Yep.
I know you're the 25th, right? Yeah, you're heading in.
Yes.
So all the best to you, and we're all by your side.
Yeah, this is kind of my last hurrah.
Well, this is not your last hurrah. Until next time.
Oh, no, not my last hurrah, I should say. I mean, this is before things. I mean, it's gonna be fine. You know, it's like I've been so positive about this whole thing, you know. It's like,
Yeah. Yep.
It's a little nerve wracking. Mm-hmm. But I'll probably be back by next Sunday. But you know, be back home by then. Mm-hmm. But
if not, the following week, you know, you'll be back.
Yeah. Yeah. You never know. But like I said, we'll see.
All right. Well, all the best to you. Okay. And so until next time, cheers.
Here's you.
All right, thanks.
Okay.
Next in the queue is none other than Mr. Darth Skeptical. Only he can be so bold. Hello, Darth.
Wow, I feel so unmuted.
Hello.
You know, I'm as you well know from talking to me for years, I'm a very weird kind of Doctor Who fan in that I have this
ability
to... That's true. But I have this ability to sort of, with one side of my brain, turn off my knowledge of the classic series and look at Doctor Who 2005 as a completely separate entity from the regular series or the old series. And with that brain, I bloody love this episode because it's doing new things for this series for the vast majority of the people who are watching it, after all. Mm-hmm. That we really haven't seen before. I mean, we haven't, except for, you know, last week where there was, you know, sort of a return to a fictional little village or whatever. We really haven't had this kind of very localized threat on Earth since, you know, 2005. And for that reason, I think it deserves all sorts of kudos. Now, of course, we know as classic fans that that was a very sort of standard setup, but we haven't had it really at all in the RTD era, and we've only had little glimpses of it so far this series. Yeah. And so to have a full-on...
That's why it reminded me very much of the Pertwee era, not just because of the Silurians, right, but of that factor, that it was a very localized threat.
Well, that's quite true. I mean, you can look at lots of different things. You can look at, you know, there's obviously the demons in there with the shield. There's obviously even a little bit of Tom Baker. There's even a little kind of, well, I guess last week was really more Android Invasion. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I mean, you know, this thing of small villages, you know, you can go to Stockbridge stuff with the, you know, Fifth Doctor comic series and now Big Finish audios. There is that element of Doctor Who that has always been there, but really hasn't been in the modern series really at all. And so for that reason, you know, this is a total breath of fresh air. And I would imagine that people who are maybe like Romana too, who sadly isn't here today, who are really just new series fans who are kind of struggling backwards to gain that old knowledge, probably looked at this and thought, that was pretty damn fabulous. And, you know, there are all sorts of really great things that Ashley Way is doing with his direction. As you said, that chase scene with Elliot, oh, that was gorgeous.
Yeah.
That was totally gorgeous. I do think Ashley Way kind of messed up the cliffhanger itself, though. But I think that might have been a budgetary constraint because, on paper, that's a great cliffhanger. It didn't really work out so well for me because Way was shooting over the shoulder the entire time. So he had a static shot, which I imagine made it cheaper to do the visual effects.
Yeah, because,
I mean, really what you should...
Yeah, because of...
Yeah, sorry, go ahead.
No, I think you're right. I think it has to do with the effect shot because it was matted in there, the whole city there.
Right. I mean, the script really cried out for, you know, a head-on shot of the Doctor and Nazarene. And they're saying, what's going on? You know, we're looking at something. We don't know what we're looking at. And then, you know, really the camera should have panned around them 180 degrees. But, of course, that would have required a whole lot more in terms of mat work than just a behind over the shoulder shot. So, you know, maybe he can be forgiven for that. But aside from that one little note, you know, gorgeous stuff. Again, we have this new sumptuous, bleached out kind of color grading that's going on that, you know, really looks like sort of dark, gloomy England, which, of course, this is Wales, but, you know.
Gloomy England, we're having beautiful weather.
Well, but, I mean, come on.
One day every 10 years.
Exactly. But, I mean, it looks, the color grading matches now the... you know, the intended gloom of the episode, which I think is adding a lot to the spookiness of Doctor Who. Again, I just love that. And if you look back at any classic series episode, almost, especially in the Pertwee era, it's always, you know, they don't try to do anything to the overcast. Mm-hmm. It's always overcast. It's, and it makes it cooler. So I love that part of it. The problem for me, if there is one really with this, oh, let me stop here and just say, freaking love the Silurian design. Because I always thought before, like, honestly, I was not at all excited to see them coming back because, it's a,
there's
not a monster.
No way they could have brought the old Silurians back without redoing them. It's just, I mean, it was barely passable, you know, back then. So, you know.
And frankly, shocking that they would give such terrible monsters such huge reams of dialogue to back in the day. But this Silurian just, I mean, literally when the doctor says, "You are gorgeous," I'm like, you're absolutely right. That is a gorgeous prosthetic design. Mm-hmm. And, you know, for fans who are like, oh, they don't look anything like it, I'm like, thank God they don't look anything like it. I mean, maybe I'm a little bit curious as to why they don't have the third eye, because that's sort of an important, you know, character feature of the Silurians, the whole
that,
psionic
that
mental energy.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't really care. You know, I'm completely happy to see these guys again, really, after this episode, because they are so gorgeous. I mean, this is, for me, you know, if you take monsters that have returned from the old series into this new series, this is probably the most successful redesign, like radical redesign. Not, and that sort of would therefore discount, you know, the series 1 through 4 Daleks, because that's not a real redesign. That's just an updating, mm-hmm. slightly. But, you know, if you're talking about, this is way better than the Cybermen, for instance.
Yeah.
Just gorgeous, gorgeous stuff.
Well, like I said, I didn't think they looked anything like the original Silurians. And I would not, when I first saw those photos, those on-location photos, you know, I don't know if they were leaked or whatever. You know, when it was speculated, could these be? And I said, well, it doesn't, you know, it could just be another alien, you know. I mean, there's nothing there that looks like the Silurian except for the reptilian skin. So, but that's all right, because, you know, we've seen, like I said, the Sea Devils were described as the cousins of the Silurians. So, I mean, and they look nothing similar either. So we can, you know, and the Doctor explains it's another branch of the species.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing that even slightly bothers me about it is that they are heavily reminiscent of that, and I've forgotten the name of the alien, but the alien that was in episode 1 of the Sarah Jane Adventures this last year. So, like, in a really pan Doctor Who universe way,
mm-hmm.
it is weird that they kind of look a lot like this. Is it Califrac? No, I don't know what the hell they were called. But anyway, there is a slight precedent for the way that they look. But that's really not a big deal, and not many people will have actually seen Sarah Jane, so who really cares? But beyond, you know, just looking at it as an episode in its own right, there are problems for me with the central deal here, and we've talked about it a little bit before here, of, okay, they're going down 21 kilometers, and that's a record. And it's like, well, it's not really a record, because that happened in Inferno. They went further than that. They went like 20 miles. Then in the Osterhagen project, obviously had to go beneath that in order to reach beneath the Earth's crust to plant the bombs. And you would have thought, well, Dave has pointed out that, you know, okay, it's a secret. These are secret projects, and this being a public project, this might be the first, you know, the deepest that a public project knows that it's gone. Mm-hmm. But you really can't explain away how this little tiny mining project is a threat for the Silurians that brings them to the surface, but the Osterhagen project wasn't. I mean, the Osterhagen project is planting nuclear bombs at Silurian level. And that didn't make them come to the surface? I don't really understand how this little tiny thing is making them come to the surface. Again, I mean, that's looking, you know, in sort of a broad Doctor Who way, like looking at the entire continuity all over. If you're just looking at just this one episode, it's really good. I would totally agree with Ken. It's a 5. But there are niggles about the central logic of the episode that are kind of ticking away in my Doctor Who addled brain.
Mm-hmm. Well, as I said, you know, Amy doesn't remember the Daleks, so maybe that plays into this. Yeah. Maybe the Silurians.
Yeah. That's true. I mean, there might well be explanations for it, but I'm saying on surface yes. value, what we have right now, it's like, wait a minute. How they're mad at this tiny little drill, but they weren't mad at getting nuclear bombs planted close to the surface. I mean, I don't know. That part of it bothers me a little bit.
And the other slight change, wasn't it? I mean, this one says that she's from the warrior class, but she's yet a female of the species, but still classed as a warrior class.
So they probably have female warriors.
Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, that's another element that's been brought to the table, as it were.
Mm-hmm. Oh, just the fact that there are explicit females?
Well, they would be considered warriors as well. You know, they're not the smaller, lighter, less aggressive side of the race.
Well, that, I guess, but that's never really been... Well,
no, what I mean is it was a nice twist. I mean, I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I'm saying the point is that the first one that in this new series do, not only is she defiant, that you know they will defend herself, but and she's a warrior class, but she's also a female of their species. So you know they've upped the ante, as it were.
I guess it just was never really clear to me that there weren't females before. Because that, you know, that really crappy voice design on the Silurians before, that could have been male, that could have been female. I mean, it was very androgynous. Mm-hmm. So, but I mean, you're absolutely right, Dave. I mean, it's wonderful that it's made much more explicit that this is clearly a female. So that's really good. And of course, you got to give a nod to the actual actor that's portraying this female because she's doing magnificent things.
Yeah.
Well, I am. I mean, I'm getting a bit worried about myself. I think I might be on the turn. I mean, what with Chanto Yoho, or whatever she was called, out of Utopia, I'm getting a bit worried.
I know. This woman is seriously, you know, if we're going to, you know, play fictional romances or whatever with Doctor Who monsters or whatever, she's seriously rivaling Chanto for, you know, most interesting female of another species for me.
Well, and hats off to the makeup appliances because you can really see her facial expressions come through. You know, if it was a thick prosthetic mask, you wouldn't have that ability.
Yeah. No, I mean, this whole revolution that we've gotten really even as far back as End of the World of doing this kind of prosthetics that allows for the prosthetics to move with the actor's facial muscles has been... fabulous for Doctor Who, let's face it.
And I think just, the reason why we see in the coming attractions the other Silurians all wearing the masks is it cuts down on production of those, the cost of those intricate, you know, appliances that go directly on the face.
Yeah, and not only that, but the time.
Yeah, the time. Well, time is money,
And I'm really curious, we were talking about this in the chat, since we're now talking about makeup, my mind is being blown a little bit by the Doctor Who Confidential, which was great, by the way. I mean, fabulous Doctor Who Confidential. If you haven't seen it, it's one of the better ones. But especially about the section where they show the application of the makeup, because the guy who's applying it is Davy Jones. Now, Davy Jones was the chief makeup designer for Series 1, but he left after Series 1 and then went on to be more of a prosthetics designer for several other shows, including Hyperdrive and Casualty 1809 or whatever it's called. 1909, I don't know. The back in time Casualty. Anyway, and then all of a sudden, here he is on Confidential doing a really long interview, and the thing is, he's not credited at all in the credits. And I can't figure out how did they get him back? He doesn't belong to Millennium FX. He's a free agent. Mm-hmm. So how has he been visiting, you know, back and forth at various points since Series 1, or did they just call him in for this one special job? Weird thing about Confidential this season is that they are interviewing every single episode of Confidential. They interview at least one person who is not in the credits at all. And you're like, wait a minute, he's good enough to be in Doctor Who Confidential, but he's not good enough to get his credit? It's weird.
Well, have you seen the list? Have you seen the list of credits? If anybody goes to the Doctor Who Podcast Alliance .org site and see the Tin Dog's recent listings, and he puts the whole cast list on his little podcast link there, I mean, there must be about 100 names already. Deservedly so, of course.
Right, but what I'm saying is, on this episode, no individual is credited for prosthetics at all. It's just Millennium Effects, period. Which is weird, because usually on prosthetic-heavy episodes, there'll be, you know, Neil Gorton will get a credit for the design, Rob Mayer will get it for prosthetic supervisor, and then they'll have, like, two people who are, like, prosthetics technicians. If it's a really heavy episode, like the Human Nature, where they had to age David Tennant, then somebody will get the credit for prosthetic makeup artist. And so, you know, usually there's like five or six people who are individually credited for prosthetics, but not on this episode. And then Davy Jones, who's apparently been gone for 4 years, just shows up on Confidential like he's never been away.
Well, are you sure he's not part of Millennium Effects now?
Yeah. Yeah, I am sure. Yeah, because he broke away to form his own company, and he has been the...
Maybe Millennium Effects brought him in as an outside contractor to help out?
Possibly, maybe, or maybe it was just... the thing is, he's very attractive because he and Neil Gorton were jointly nominated for an RTS award for The End of the World. So he is, in effect, you know, sort of... He's the only makeup designer... I think this is a true statement. He's the only makeup designer in the 2005 series that has actually been specifically nominated for an award for makeup for Doctor Who. I think that's right. I could be wrong, but at any rate.
The latest one that Tin Dog has put up, I mean, the art department, they've got about 25 to 30 credits. The makeup and prosthetics have got, you know, 4 or 5. So, I mean, perhaps he was just subcontracted or whatever. Makeup and prosthetics.
Right, but I...
But that's for the previous episode, of course, not this one.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, definitely earlier in this season, you've had people who were... Like, Rob Mayer has gotten a credit this season, for instance. But it's just weird on this one where, quite clearly, you have this magnificent prosthetic design. Nobody specifically is getting credited for it. It's unusual. I mean, I'm betting that next week... Where you're going to have a lot more people who are a lot more Silurians in it, that you're going to have credits for prosthetic design. But it's just going back to Davy Jones. It's just weird that this guy who was their initial makeup designer, like that's a top line credit, right? The head of the makeup department has come back into Doctor Who and they don't even give him a credit. I mean, it's the behind the scenes equivalent of like Billy Piper coming back into Doctor Who and not giving her a credit.
Yeah.
But I'm, you know, I'm obsessed with behind the scenes stuff, so that's
we wouldn't have noticed.
Whatever. Yeah, I know. Anyway, so great episode 5. Going on to somebody else. I'm sorry, I've rambled.
Thank you, Darth.
Yeah,
always a pleasure.
Only he could be so bold. Mm-hmm.
White coat.
We have a lot more of our live show. We're going to continue that in our next episode of Doctor Who Podshock, number 204. Now I know I had promised a extra episode of Doctor Who Podshock in between our last show and this show, and we still have that in production, and that's coming forth, and we just wanted to get this show out because this is reviewing The Hungry Earth, and the follow-up story for this is Cold Blood, which is coming up on Saturday, and a lot was going on in this week, a lot of work that was going on for the show behind the scenes, some stuff that's coming up in the near future, so it was being all put together, plus post-production, so anyway... Yada, yada, yada. This show is a little bit delayed more delayed than I would have liked. So we wanted to get the Hungry Earth review out first. So this is coming out now. And we have the part 2 that's coming out on the heels of this one once that gets through post-production. And then we'll do the extra show. Plus, we have the live show we recorded last week in New York City at Fiddlesticks. And I want to thank everyone who attended Fiddlesticks and attended the book signing for The Mythological Dimensions of Doctor Who. And in fact, we have 2 copies of the book, 2 signed copies by the authors and editors of the book that were there. they are going to Doctor Who Podchuck supporting subscribers, randomly chosen. Go to our website for more information about that. TheGallifreyanEmbassy.org or Podchuck.net. We'll be giving one away on the 25th anniversary of the Gallifreyan Embassy next month. And following that, we'll be on the 5th anniversary of Doctor Who Podchuck. So all current Doctor Who Podchuck supporting subscribers are eligible. We'll be randomly picking those, and that's explained in the article on our website, thegallifreyanembassy.org or podchuck.net. And if you're not already a Podchuck supporting subscriber, you can learn how to become one by also going to our website, thegallifreyanembassy.org or podchuck.net. There's a little graphic banner ad there to become a Doctor Who Podchuck supporting subscriber for a low monthly subscription fee to, as a show of support. Not only will you be helping us continue and grow the show, but you'll get extra content like this extra episode I've been talking about. We do appreciate your patience, but remember that it is because of our Podchuck supporting subscribers that not only are the extra shows possible, but all of our shows are possible in part through their support. And if you're already a Podchuck supporting subscriber, thank you so much for your continued support. Now, I did mention our website. On our website, you can find lots of stuff going on in between Doctor Who Podchuck episodes. Not only are all our episodes listed there, but you can also find galleries as well as forums. We have a very lively community there discussing Doctor Who, reviewing episodes as they're coming out, going back into other episodes, discussing stuff even outside of Doctor Who. You can discover how to send us feedback, and to that end, there's the Podchuck public call box, which is 206-600-6517. So if you don't get into our live shows, and if you want to sound off with a review or any other comments about the show or Doctor Who or whatever, you can call the Doctor Who Podchuck public call box. Once again, the number is 206-600-6517. Or you can record your feedback and send it to feedback@podchuck.net. All this information is on our website, thegallifreyanembassy.org or podchuck.net. You can also follow us all on Twitter. You can follow Doctor Who Podchuck on Twitter at twitter.com/podchuck. You can follow Ken Deep on Twitter at twitter.com/kendeep. You can follow Dave Cooper on Twitter at twitter.com/daveac. And you can follow myself on Twitter at twitter.com/LouisTrapani. That's LouisTrapani. So thank you for listening to this episode of Doctor Who Podchuck. We'll be back with the continuation of our live show. Plus, we have more stuff in the can coming to you soon, including some interviews from people that we have never had on our show before. So some exciting new stuff around the corner. Keep on listening. Thank you for listening. We always appreciate you are out there listening, and we always value your feedback. So until next time, cheers, everyone. And if you're in the U.S., have a happy holiday weekend. It's Memorial Day weekend in the U.S. And if you have a holiday elsewhere in this world on this weekend, enjoy that as well. You have been listening to Doctor Who Podchuck, presented by the fan-run GallifreyanEmbassy.org. Doctor Who is owned and trademarked by the BBC. Doctor Who Podchuck is not affiliated with the BBC in any way. Come back next time for another exciting and informative episode of Doctor Who Podchuck. Doctor Who Podchuck theme music by Jeff Smith at thejeffsmith.com. This has been a production of Art Trap Productions and is presented to you by the Gallifreyan Embassy and has been made possible in part by supporting subscribers and donations from listeners like you.
You're not making any sense, man.
Excuse me, I'm making perfect sense. You're just not keeping up.